now, you could find out from the independent mill, he's their retired manager.
Well, you know him, so I wonder if you could ask him what his sentiments would be about this proposal sometime. Would you mind doing that?
Well, I wouldn't mind at all.
We would take very good care of it.
He would have given, he would have given all the paperwork to the mill badly over the summer. They started out last summer, see one of those deals, and the paperwork's gone, and that mill was an old one. You know, he went back pretty well, after, you know.
Probably.
Put a cross section of the camp, went with the paper and that mill.
Yes.
As a suggestion, I would say that some of these stories that you might figure on in this publication, I should think there should be a committee of appointed to look into these stories to see if there are things. For instance, a man peddling this bicycle from Dawson to Nome. I lived here all my life, and that seems kind of foolish to me.
Well, it does to me, too. Well, here's, this is part, it's, I saw some perplexed looks on you people's faces when I mentioned this, and understandably, because I had one too, and your point is very well taken, Frank, because the very next order of business is the appointment of an editorial board to check for authenticity, to do editorial work, and to help form this full proposal for the magazine. So your point is right in order. I certainly agree. Some of the most fantastic hoaxes have been perpetrated on the American public, and it starts long before people started saying that George Washington chopped down a cherry tree with his little hatchet.
There's a lot of stories, you know, that students make their rounds. Did you ever hear that fellow that packed the piano over Chilkoot? I've had people ask you that.
No, that was a stove, wasn't it?
No, it was a piano.
Yeah, the time he got it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But to get to the real story, you know.
Yes, I agree.
That's what I mean.
We have to authenticate the material, no question about it. And certainly your point's right in the next order here.
Yeah.
I heard there was a stove, and some guy commented on it, says, isn't it kind of heavy? And he says, no, it's not the stove that's heavy, it's these 200-pound sacks of flour I've got in the oven. The piano has even more interesting possibilities. Well, I wonder about the editorial board. I think that what we need to do here is to go down the list of the full membership. I think by assigning some responsibilities to some of the members who have not been attending, and this will pull them in here and put them to work. And then I also think that we should put some of you people to work too. Now, I'm willing to help out, but I must tell you that 3 days this week I have had 25 minutes from 7:30 in the morning until 5:30 at night, and I ate my lunch during that period of time. That's the truth. And I couldn't take on this full load. I just simply haven't the time. But I would be willing to help, and perhaps you don't want me. Maybe I'm being presumptuous here. But I would certainly be willing to help. Now, what I think we ought to do is to form a, while this was on the agenda for tonight, is to form a committee to work on the selection of the editorial board, rather than go down through a list of all of the members and have us say, yeah, let's put him on or not put him on. I think we should come up, appoint a subcommittee to come up with, say, 15 names.
It should be large enough to
get some right.
Research.
And then have the subcommittee present this to the membership, and then the membership vote, since they're going to be directly involved here, have the membership vote on, say, approximately 8 or 10 members of the whole editorial board. Now, this is the proposal I wanted to make from the floor tonight. I didn't know I was going to be presiding. And this would permit, I think, first of all, careful selection, and then even more by the subcommittee, and then even more careful selection and voting on by the membership. Is there any dissent to this approach? I mean, don't be afraid to speak up.
I think it's fine.
Is that all right? Is there anyone who is against this or would rather do it some other way? I could call for votes on all of this, and I'm not trying to ramrod through anything here, but I think we're a small enough group that we can discuss this and still come up with an agreement.
May I say another thing?
Yes, Harry.
I think that some of the older people here that have true knowledge of Alaska, when they find out we're in earnest, they will start to help take part in it.
Oh, no question about it.
Yeah, you see, well, this has been carried along and nothing done about it. And,
right.
You know,
oh, I
and
think
when
so
they
too.
Once find we're in earnest and we're going to go to work, they'll want to take part in it.
Right. Well, I think we have to consider here in selecting, say, getting 15 names, people who have broad background of Alaska, who aren't afraid to question that the guy drove a bicycle from, maybe he pushed it, Frank.
Did I understand you to say from Dawson to Nome?
Yeah.
I couldn't question that.
Well, this is what I did the last meeting, too. I haven't seen the document, but Mayor said yes, he would make it available to us. But we need people on this editorial board who will shake their head and say, boy,
prove it.
Let's prove it. Yeah, we have to authenticate.
Can I ask Frank a question?
Yes.
Did McDonald actually drive the dog team to Seattle over the proposed Alcan Highway the other day?
Well, yes, he drove. He made that trip.
He started out on snow and wound up on wheels, is that it?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
When was this?
Well, the father of the Alcan Highway, the man that proposed the highway years before it was ever done.
Well, I've not read about this.
Well, I knew the man around the Nordia years ago. And
well, maybe we better track that one down. That might be a good one.
Yeah,
there's some here. McDonald. Yes, that's Donald McDonald.
Yeah.
Oh, sure, I get it. I get it, sure. Well, let's look into that. That might be a possibility. Yeah. Well, I'd like to appoint Frank and Harry Hughes and Mr. Rowinski as the subcommittee to come up with 15 names. And at our next meeting, we will reduce this to 8 or 10, if that meets with your approval. If we get too large of a committee, then we won't get any work done. If we get just the right size committee, we can apportion this so that, okay, we look this over and we'll have this group check it for authenticity, raise questions about it. This person does some editing or some condensing. This person has to look for pictures to go along with it and all that sort of thing. And incidentally, in the appointment of this subcommittee or this committee, I would like for you people to wrangle out among yourselves why all three of you should not be on it. Just being on the committee doesn't excuse you from not winding up on the editorial board. Is this clear? Okay. Is there any other old business that you'd like to discuss tonight? I wonder if you have any new business before we have our guest speaker tonight.
I don't believe there is any.
Well, before I turn the meeting over to Florence Manville to introduce our guest speaker this evening, I would like to thank someone for bringing the coffee here and greeting me with a cup. Did you make the coffee?
Okay.
Thank you very much. And at this time, I'd like to have Florence introduce our guest speaker for the evening, and every word you say will be taped for posterity.
We've had speakers come in from Valdez. We've had speakers come in from Nome up the Yukon River by riverboat. But tonight we're going to have something a little different. We're going to have a speaker that came in by the way of Dawson. She came in the year about 1900. She didn't tell me just how old she is, but I have an idea. She's pretty young at that time. And she's the sister of a very prominent man here. He's deceased in the time of Dr. Bluefield. And tonight we're going to hear from Mrs. Dennis Coyle.
Christopher. could we get the spelling of that name, Florence, on the record?
Yes,
Coyle? Yes.
C-O-Y-L-E.
It's C-O-Y-L-E, and you spell your first name?
A-D-R-I-A-N-E.
A-D-R-I-N-A.
And that's Lutro.
L-U-T-R-O.
L-U-T-R-O, Lutro. Coyle.
All right. I'll speak that into the mic now. A-D-R-I-A-N-A. Middle name, L-U-T-R-O. And last name, C-O-Y-L-E. Now, Harry, do you want to take over and position her here for...
The date today first, please.
February
23rd. 1961, at Fairbanks, Alaska. The Tamnaw Yukon Historical Society meeting. And Mrs. Adriana Lutro Coyle will give us a story on tape now.
I suppose I should start about the time that we left Tacoma, Washington, to come up here. We left first part of July, and I arrived in Dawson on Friday the 13th of July. And railroad, the White Pass Yukon Railroad, was not connected at that time. The steel was not put together, I think, till about September of 1900. So we had to go in a little boat down Lake Linderman and Lake Bennett to catch the steel to Skagway. Well, then the next I remember of arriving in Dawson, and it was a beautiful day. And we looked up at the hill and said, well, now that's the hill we're going over to, because we were going up to 11 El Dorado, where my father and uncle were mining. So, of course, I don't remember too much of it. I was quite young at the time. But there's a few experiences that we had on the claim that I still remember. And one of them, I guess there's every child in Alaska, of course, has got to taste steel in the wintertime. We had walked, my brother and I, many times from this claim over to the other, and had to pass a lot of steam pipes. So in the summertime, we had to watch out because they were hot. But this particular day in the winter that we went over, and he was able to take his hand out of his mitt, which I wasn't able to do, to taste it, so I had to put my tongue on it. And the people that were on 12 above on El Dorado, they were Frenchmen. And you could just imagine the language that was going on at that time. So, of course, there was a lot of screeching and screaming, and there was no hot water or anything like that. So finally my uncle came, and he left the skin of my tongue on the pipe. I'll never forget that, because I wasn't able to eat for quite a number of years. We were there without thinking about that experience. We were there for 2 years, and in 1902, we moved to Dawson, is about 15 miles, I would say. And that fall, I started a school, and it was a new building. The Dawson Public School was built in 1902. They had a kindergarten there, but I went to first grade. And we had 8 large rooms, and here, just a few years ago, this building burnt down in Dawson. And where we lived on 8th and Harper, you could see all over town. And we had to, often people ask me, well, what did you do for amusements up there? You had no radio, and why, that's terrible not to have a radio. No moving pictures. Well, I said, I don't know, we always seem to be busy. And of course, when you're nowadays, people don't do the things that they did then. Never knew of anyone paying for a babysitter. You always took your children with you. and even the dances, which when we got to be about 9 or 10 years old, we always went to the Masonic dances and the Oddfellow dances, and they had them every Saturday night. One would be one night, and then the next night would be the other. So that way was one of the entertainments. And of course, in 1907, my father, who was mining down here on Dome Creek, he put the first deep hole down on Discovery Dome. It was there, and we decided to come down for a visit. So we came down to Fairbanks in 7, but we didn't stay, because our home was in Dawson. We went back that fall. But during that summer here, we stayed in a hotel on Dome, which had some hotels at the time. Of course, right now, people don't think there was any hotels or any saloons or anything, because there's nothing on Dome Creek at the present time. Then in the fall, we walked from Dome Creek over to Clary. We stayed a couple of nights at Little El Dorado. There were some friends there. And then we were able to take this little railroad back into Fairbanks and went back on the last boat, which was the steamer Lavelle Young. And when we got back to Dawson, I was asked to be one of the ones that would do some dancing. And this Scotch man that used to give lessons had four of us, and we did the Irish reel and the Scotch reel for all entertainment. And that's what the people did. They had many entertainments. If there were, knew there was going to be some entertainment, why, we would be invited to dance. And then he had others dance too. They danced the hound fling and the Irish washerwoman and the sailor hornpipe. So that way, why, it took up quite a bit of our time, and where we practiced was in the fire hall, which was the museum, and burnt down in Dawson here a couple of years ago. So, of course, when there was a fire, well, that would interrupt our practice, but we always enjoyed having the horses come out and all this excitement down. On the 24th of May, which was Queen Victoria's birthday, was always celebrated, and with maypole dances and the races for children. And instead of giving money, why, they would always go and would be something like they would go and get nugget jewelry and things like that that were given to the children, because we had all kinds of pop and candy and things that they gave them too. And another celebration was the Midnight Sun, and that is when you have to walk there. It's about 4 miles to go around, but when you come back, you can slide down the hill, so it didn't take us so long to come back. So every year, we made that trip up there, and of course they had a horse and rig to take the pop and candies and things that they had up there at that time. So all in all, why, people just seem to make their own entertainment. And in the wintertime, I just don't know where the time went, but we were always busy doing something. And we used to, you never thought of, like kids today, you see them in slacks and jeans and things. Well, the girls never wore that. The only time that we ever got a chance to wear our brother's jeans were when after school we'd go out and slide on the hills. But there's quite a few hills in Dawson, good sliding too. The waterman would take and wet these hills down so that it makes excellent sliding, bobsled sliding, and also we used pans. We'd get a dish pan or something, not like they have these great big saucers nowadays that you can buy in the store and go sliding with. But we used to use a dish pan or a pie tin or something and sit in that and slide down the hills, you see. Of course, the older young people, that would be those who would be about 19 or 20, that would go bobsledding, they didn't want us out there at night. But we used to go out there in the afternoon and use their slides. They jumped down up at about 9th and church, which was just a block from our place, and go on down, right down past the churches, right down to the river. And then, of course, they'd have to walk back up again with their sleds. We also lived just a block from Robert Service. We saw him every day that he was in Dawson. He passed our place, and we always talked to him and always had something to say to us.
About how many people lived in Dawson in one year?
Well, in the early days when we first came there, there were in the thousands, you know. But when we left there in 1910, there were not so many people then, there at that time. And after my father got through mining down here, we went up, he came back to Dawson, and we had ground on 30 above Bonanza, which was 17 miles from Dawson. In the summertime, we would pedal up there by bicycle, which we really did, Frank.
But
yes, all the young people had bicycles, and that was one of the diversions too in the evening, would be to go out for a ride. And many times we'd always go up to the Overby Bridge, which was probably about 3 miles from Dawson. And we didn't have roads like we have here, but we made it all right. And I often wonder why two of us, I remember Carol and I went up by ourselves on this trip, 17 miles, we never thought about bears. And I don't think there were too many bears in that country at that time. Well, then, of course, in Dawson, we never had to use bed nets. But when we lived on the Crickson, we did. But with the smoke and things, we didn't have to use them. And head nets, you'd only see them if there was somebody going out into the hills.
Who were some of the colorful characters that you remember over there in those years? You didn't have to know Jerusalem Hill?
No, I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. But we had the judges there, Judge McCauley's boy, and Bob went to school with us. And Grace Henderson, whose father was governor of the Yukon Territory at that time, she was in school with us. And also one of George McCormick's daughters. She was the only daughter he had. But she had already been out to school when she came there. And of course, in the Canadian schools at that time, every morning we said the Lord's Prayer. That was the first thing on the agenda, school. And people say, school is so much harder now than it was then. But at that time when you got into high school, you just didn't take 4 subjects. You took all 12 subjects. And you matriculated in 3 years instead of going 4 years. So really it was, I think, harder at that time to in school. I see Evie Davis is there. He was in my class at one time in school, but and Mrs. George Black, who's not here now, she was one of the ones in my school at the time. Frank, he was older. I don't think that Frank went to that school, did you, Frank? The Dawson Public School?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you went to the other school.
No.
The head?
I went with your brother Art. Mm-hmm.
They had 2 schools in Dawson. They are the Catholic parochial school and then the Dawson Public School. The Maryland family were very friendly with us. In fact, my folks and both of them were young people in Tacoma before they ever came up here and were ever married. So, of course, Mrs. Maryland always used to tell about the time that we were down there playing, and I painted Leslie's face. First, they always had a lot of paint, so I proceeded to paint his face all up. And no, they just thought that was kind of funny to think of that. But as I say, we always went together in the afternoons, if the women were going out, why, they took their children with them. They didn't leave them home for babysitters. And
how about riverboat trips in the summer?
Well, they always had a lot of excursions in the summertime, and that way it kept them busy. 1905, engineers came to the Dawson country, and they had a big celebration on the dome, not on the dome that you see from Dawson, but the dome of Hunker Dome. And that is the first time that I just, no, of course, don't remember him, but he remembered me, and that was, Mr. Coyle was there at that time when we were up there. And that evening, we went down to, where was this we went? Murray's place, anyhow, Murray's Roadhouse.
Dominion?
Yeah, Dominion Roadhouse. And this man had a, and his wife had a cat. And this cat had a whole lot of baby clothes. So I can remember we dressed the cat all up and thought that was wonderful to be able to have a little buggy for it and something, you know, we didn't have in Dawson. Of course, we always had dogs. We always had one dog or two. And in the winter time, that took up a lot of our time.
Well, Indiana, I don't know whether you were too young at that time or not, but you recall the time that old Chief Isaac made it rain there?
No, but I remember the time that Chief Isaac stopped Art on the street and tied his shoelace and told him to go home and tell your parents that Chief Isaac tied your shoelace for you today. I remember that. Of course, the natives, we didn't call them natives there. They were always called Indians. And they would come up very often from Moose Hide with their things that they wanted to sell or barter, exchange, whatever you had. Of course, they were always welcome at our place. They had a big porch there, and they'd sit outside there and have something to eat all of them. And years afterwards, after I was married and made a trip in, back in 1920, why, we were going along the street, and I ran into a couple of these Indian women, and they stopped me, and they started in saying, "Oh, I remember you, you live up there," and all this and that, and Denny got such a kick out of that, he said, that to think that the Indians would remember me. In the winter time, they had a skating rink there, and the boys played hockey, and also a curling rink alongside of it. And in the summertime, that place, which was called the Dawson Amateur Athletic Association building, they had a swimming pool there. So of course, we all learned to swim in this little swimming pool in the summertime. That's something that Fairbanks hasn't got. I've always talked about that. That's what they should have.
Do you remember, Adriana, the name of the gentleman that had charge of that BAA?
Yes, Phil Kramer.
That's right.
And his name wasn't Phil. His name wasn't Phil, but Phil was his father. Well, Phil Kramer and my brother and Marjorie Shaw had birthdays on the same day, the 11th of March. So one year we gave a big party. It must have been every child in Dawson was invited to this party, and we had between 200 and 300 at this party that they had that night. They had engaged a Masonic hall there. That was one of the big affairs there. But we all had birthday parties nearly every day, it seemed like. You know, some place to go.
I wonder if you could tell us, you said you came to Alaska. Could you please tell us who came to Alaska with you and who were the members of your family?
Uh-huh. Well, my father came up here in 1897.
And his name was?
Arne Luttrell.
Yes.
And then he came, he was here and came down the Yukon River and out by the way of Nome in 1899. And then we came back, my mother and brother and I.
Your brother's name?
Arthur.
Arthur.
And Alaska was not new to our family because I had an uncle in my father's brother was up in the Circle Country in 1894. So of course he knew all about Alaska, and my father was anxious then to come
and
up
what
to
was his name?
His name was Olaf, O-L-A-F, Olaf Luttrell.
And what did he do?
He was mining up there.
Mining.
And he came out in 98 and didn't go back.
Now we know who we were.
Oh.
I wonder now if you could tell us, we're going to interrupt you at different points along here. As long as we keep up this continuity, this is important, and I think we've stopped now at the point where the Indians would come to visit with you. But I'd like to go back just a little bit and ask you a couple of questions about Robert's service. How did he mix with the people there? Was he very much a member of the community?
Yes, he was. And, of course, he was a bank clerk. That's what he did. And then he was writing besides. And nearly every night in the summer, we would see him on the hillside sitting in the, with his girlfriend, although he didn't marry that girl. But he sat up there and I suppose was writing or had thoughts of what he was going to write about.
Now, did you get a chance to read some of his work there?
Oh, yes. Yes, we had his books there and read them in school.
And what was the general feeling about him there at that time? I mean, about his work? Did you feel that he was really capturing the flavor of the country?
No, we didn't feel that he would be as renowned as he has been at the time.
Did you like his work then?
Yes, especially the ballads of the Chechaka that he wrote and the songs of the sourdough.
How was he, how did people feel about him in the town? Was he well accepted by the people?
Oh, yeah.
Was he friendly?
He was very friendly. Anyhow, he's friendly to the kids, anyhow. Yeah. To us, anyhow, would see him about every day.
Did you ever argue with him about whether or not he was truly capturing the color and the feeling of the country?
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. I was very young.
How did the people feel about him? Did they feel that he was really telling the North Country stories in his ballads and his other writings?
Oh, I couldn't say that.
Did he really capture the flavor of it?
I couldn't say that they did, because there were so many that was writing these jingles, you know, at that time, that they never thought that he would be so well known.
Now, one other question. You always talk, you mentioned about the mosquitoes, and at different meetings we've often asked, how did you keep the mosquitoes off? You mentioned the head nets and the smudges, but what else did you do to fight these ever mosquitoes?
They have Buick. Have you ever heard of that?
Buick
and burnt that.
Yes. What did you do when you walked across the country?
Well, you'd have to have the head nets on when you did that, of course. Like I say, when we lived in Dawson, we didn't have to have them, see, on account of the smoke and things at that time. But, of course, that goes into something else now. When you get down in the tundra, now I'm not going into my other life, later life, my later life, I should say, where I have combated a lot of mosquitoes and lived with the mosquitoes. Of course, that's where the tundra is.
Did you use anything else to keep them off?
Well, we had citronella.
Anything else?
No, not that I know of. Well, another thing that I would like to say, too, at this time, in the years that we, of course, when we came to Dawson in 1902, we had electricity. We didn't have washing machines or irons or anything like that, but we did have electricity. And, in the early days when we were on the creek, we didn't have these gas lamps like they have, these Coleman lamps. Everything was kerosene. And I didn't know very much about the gas lamps until I went down to Ruby, and that's in 17, but that's another story altogether, that part of my life.
Well, I won't ask you any more questions. You ought to pick up your thread here about 1905 now.
Well, I tell you, I went outside in 1904 and going through, we went back to Minneapolis to visit. And while we were going there, these Indians came and met the trains, you know, and everything, and with their horses and buggy. And oh, I was so excited. I said, oh, look at those Indians. They've got horses. I couldn't imagine that, you know. So then when we went back there and stayed with my mother's family, sister, who was married to a minister, and of course they, you know, don't have too, didn't at that time in 1904 have too much to eat, and so the women folks were invited out this particular night, and they were having creamed ham. So when my mother came home from that party that she and my aunt had been to, I crawled up in her lap and I started crying. She said, what's the matter? I said, well, I said, I want to go home to Daddy. I can't even get enough to eat. So I said, well, what was the matter? What did you have? We had creamed ham. So my aunt said, why, the idea, why don't you learn your children to eat everything? She said, well, my mother said I wouldn't eat the creamed ham either, because ham at that time, you know, was pretty strong. We didn't have the new way of curing it, and the same with the bacon. Of course, in later years then it came out that they would have this covering that they would put on the hams and bacon. Your ham and bacon was much better then. But I remember Ed Crawford here in town, he was at this Christmas party that there was over 40 people at, that my mother cooked for, and but they had rabbits, and ptarmigan was the main thing, and for the dinner. And I can't remember having turkey. I don't believe we had any turkeys at that time.
It's still in Dawson.
Yeah, this is in Dawson, up on the creeks in 1900, Christmas 1900. And of course, they had beef. You could get beef there, because they drove the beef in from the coast into Dawson and slaughterhouses. The same here in Fairbanks in 1907. They had a slaughterhouse out on Don Creek when we were there that summer. Killed quite a few cattle. They have no way of keeping it. You know, they'd have to use the meat right away.
Pardon me, how did you travel on that trip?
From Dawson?
Yeah, when you left Dawson, went to Minneapolis.
Oh, we went up the river by boat, you know, then by train from Seattle, and then back the same way. But we did make one trip in the spring of 1911 from Whitehorse down by horses over
the
ice along the trail. Mm-hmm. And but it was in the early part of March, and it was wonderful weather, just like we're having here at the present time. It didn't get cold.
How long were you in Minneapolis? When did you come back to Dawson?
We came back that fall. We just out for the summer.
Came back in the fall of 1904?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how long did you remain at Dawson then?
Well, I was from there until 1911. We didn't leave Dawson until 1911. But in the meantime, we came to Fairbanks for just for the summer.
And what year was that?
1907.
I see. How did the women make out in Dawson in those early days? You mentioned that they took their children with them. Was life extremely hard for them? What were some of their problems, household problems, and clothing problems, and food preserving problems?
Well, I can't say that there was any hardship. It's just how you make your life. If you can find hardships if you want to, but if you want to get along, you can get along. And that's the way that most of the people did. And you never heard of anyone freezing or anything like that. They were always well covered. The children were always well taken care of. Of course, when it was 45 below, the school bell didn't ring. We didn't go to school then. So we'd have to make it up in the end of the season, which would be, well, into June before school would be out.
Did they can berries in that time during summertime for winter?
Or did they dry them?
No, they would dry the berries, but there's no, not much canning.
No.
Of course, everybody had gardens there in Dawson and things like that.
How'd they preserve their garden then for the winter?
Well, they didn't.
They didn't?
No.
They didn't dry it?
No. No, they didn't.
That's it.
There's quite a lot of gardens in Dawson yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
See, Frank Young and myself were over there this summer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know there is some up there.
Well, you say that you left Dawson in 1911. And is this that other life you don't want to talk about?
Well, that's going to take too long, see. That's 1917, from 1917 up to the present time. And that would take another tape to tell that, you see. That's my married life. Well, I have had, I will say that I have had a lot of experience. In that other life.
Go back to your first life. And you say you lived at Dawson then and until 1911, and you came out, left Dawson for one season in 1907 in Fairbanks. Now, all this time you were growing up, I assume, and
yes, I finally got into high school then. See, I left.
How did the patterns of life change from this 1904 period that you left off on up to, say, 1911 when you left Dawson? How did the life of Dawson change? How did your living habits, your problems, things that
you
are?
Well, you see, it's a company came in there then into Dawson and took up quite a few of the mining claims. Of course, everyone came down to Fairbanks here when the strike was on.
That was the Dominion Mining Company?
No, that was the Yukon Gold.
Yukon Gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so then, of course, people left and came on down here. Quite a number of them, and a number of them went outside.
But, was there any outstanding gold strike made that you remember a little about?
No, not at that time. I remember that when we first moved to Dawson, there was a mail strike, and my father went on up to that strike, but it was hard to get supplies in there, and there wasn't very much doing up there at that time in the mail country.
What did you hear about the Eagle Country and Wade Creek down in that area? That's later.
No, I haven't been in that part of the country. But I do remember Eagle when we came down 1907, because when we went back that fall, they had the most delicious carrots. We all stopped and got these great big carrots and ate. You remember that? It was lovely.
What were some of the prices that you encountered those days? Do you recall? You must have had operated on a gold system then. Is that right? Make the
person
gold dust?
Oh, no. We had currency then. Mm-hmm.
Was the cost of living rather high?
Well, I don't think it's as high as it is today here.
No food problems?
No, we didn't have.
Eat better.
Oh, well, that was just the particular ham that I didn't like. Spoiled ham. We used to get. But I don't know, we had everything that, of course we didn't have the fresh fruit that you have today up there. And the same with the vegetables in the winter time, we didn't have that like we do. Nowadays everything is flown in here and makes a difference.
Can you describe the clothing to a little extent? Because everything has changed today that you used to have to wear in those days over in Dawson. Type of clothing?
Well, I don't know that's any very much difference. Of course, we wore long handles, everybody
that's
did.
That's what I mean, and woolly.
Yes. And long socks all the time. But they felt shoes is what most of us wore there, because they always had those. And no parkas. We didn't know what parkas were, or no. No, no, they just had coats and jackets, that's all. It was worn.
Headpieces were what?
Some fur, and some knitted.
Could you give us just a little taste of this other life and kind of, because we want to bring you back and pick up where you leave off this evening, but before you do this, I wonder if you could kind of give us the what led up to this other life, and then we'll chop it off. Mm-hmm. Unless other people have other questions in the first life.
Well, in 1911 I went out to school, and
where did you go, please?
And we were going to Florida. That's where we planned to go. So everything was given away just like that because we were going to Florida and didn't need it. And my uncle was down in Florida at all these different places to find out where we would settle. One day we'd get a telegram, we'd find an ideal spot. The next day, no, the water's no good here. So of course we ended up settling in the state of Washington. We had a place in Mount Vernon, Washington. We had a place over in Kitsap County that looked awfully nice. So in the meantime, a terrible fog came up. Of course, Seattle has a lot of fog on the waterfront there. And we'd have to come in every day to high school and go back, because there was no high schools over in Bremerton or any of those places at that time in 1911. So there was two ferry boats that collided, so that changed my mother's mind. We wouldn't go there, so we went up to Mount Vernon there to settle. And I was there 6 years in Mount Vernon. In the meantime, my brother came up here because we had two uncles in the Ruby District. So then in 1917, I came up to visit. And then I was married here.
Well, are there any questions covering the first life up to 1917? Well, if not, why, let's hold this, if that needs your approval.
Mrs. Clark, may I ask you, this next summer, if we go to DOS again, would it be, with your permission, that we could play some of this story to the people in DOS? They're very interested in the history. And I have made tape recordings at Dawson and made transfer tapes and sent back to them.
Well, you better let me hear it first.
I've made transfer tapes of their stories over there and sent them back to them for their historical society and research.
Well, there's very few people up there left now that I went to school with in Dawson right now. Very few people there.
The Canadian government is going all out to restore a lot of the buildings in Dawson. For a historical and tourist attraction. And I just wondered to ask you now.
Well, yeah, after I hear it.
You want to hear it again? Well, anytime you want to hear it, I'll gladly play it.
Okay.
If you want a tape made off of it, I'll make it off for you.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Coyle. And if there, I think we'll have you back to this other life because you've,
Yes, that's a little more interesting, I think.
If there are no other questions, we'll stand adjourned this evening, but...
I want to get everybody's name on the tape.
I see. Judy, you want to get all of the members of the present here?
But you want to tell somewhere where your dog was she days?
No, that comes back next time. Say who you are. Say who you are, Denny.
What is your name, Denny?
Thank you, Danny. Charles. Andy Wiggins.
Well,
I don't know. I was wrong. It was hard to know what to talk about. I should have heard. I wished I heard somebody else talk first, but I have never heard anyone.
You think it's wonderful. I think you did.
Oh, no.
I'd like you to come back again and get the other part of the song, the second life.
Well, that's more interesting because...
How many reincarnations have we now?
Well...
Like the way she said that.
But you know, I don't like to talk about how I saved people's lives and things like that. And of course, that's why I didn't want to go into that tonight, because I have done a lot of work.
It might be interesting to take a particular one, Abigail, and tell us about one of those entities. And build up a story about one of those entities where you have saved your life. It's quite interesting to build that story up.
This is February the 23rd. The Tananaw Yukon Historical Society meeting at Birch Park Recreation Hall at Fairbanks, Alaska. And this was a story by Mrs. Adriana Luttrell Coyle, early day pioneer of her life when she came into the Dawson area as a child, and some of her experiences up till about the time of 1911. And at a later date, she will tell more of her story. This tape was taken for the Historical Society and the Pioneers of Alaska, Igloo 4 and Auxiliary 8, and the Pioneer Women of Alaska, which there are, Adriana Coyle is a member of the Pioneer Women of Alaska for many years. So that is the end of this meeting. This is Harry L. Hughes, member of Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, and on the committee for making tape recordings and preserving the history of Alaska. This is Harry Hughes recording some additional information on Mrs. Adriana Luttrell Coyle by Tom Long Jr., a longtime resident of Alaska and a personal friend of Mrs. Coyle and her family.
I was a boy in Ruby in 1917 at Mrs. Coyle's wedding. I was present at her wedding. And I can remember when Mrs. Coyle used to make trips from the Cricks, poor man, to Ruby, 58 miles, by dog team, and drive the team by herself and make the trip by herself. I can also remember when Mrs. Coyle ran the hoist and operated the boiler house for her husband in mining, which was a man's job. And besides cooking for the crew. Well.
Do you remember the names of people that were on that team? Remember she's talking about her relatives' names?
Well, yeah.
Give a list of all of her relatives
that
you know about.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew Mrs. Coyle's father, Arnie Luttrell, and I knew John Vick in Ruby, her uncle, and I knew her brother, Arthur Luttrell. Those members of the family I knew very well.
What year did you become acquainted with
them? 1915.
No, 1915.
Yeah. But I became acquainted with Mrs. Coyle in 1917. Of course, that's when I first knew her as a boy. You know, you wouldn't want to mix up a lot of other stuff, and later on, you know. No.
Well, put it as if you were at her wedding the time she got married, that'll remind
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I was present at her wedding in 1917. See, I remember that distinctly. See, I remember the wedding because it was one of the big, it was a big event in the town, you know. Denny Coyle had dough then, you know. Christ, I know three different times when Denny Coyle was worth a small fortune. You know, he made it and then broke himself again, you know.
Well, that's by a whiskey you get it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they forget those things.
Yeah. See, he made big money on Poor Man, and then he went over on Spruce Creek, and he made big money on Spruce Creek mining, too, you know. That's two distinct times I remember of. I mean, when he... Well, the man must have been worth $100,000, I guess. So, you know. She used to make lots of trips, old Lady Coyle. Christ, I remember that. I mean, you know, go outside, you know.
That
in those
money.
Days, it cost money, man, to go outside. It'd take you months to go outside. Christ, she spent dough. Of course, Denny hasn't got any money now, you know.
Well,
oh, they've got a little money to get along on, you know, but I mean, they haven't got money like they used to have, you know. All those goddamn big row of diamonds she wears, you know, that's prehistoric wealth, you know, that they had. But she used to spend lots of dough, boy, she put on the dog in her day, you know.
Now I'm
going to
stop
here,
and I'm going to back it up like you hear what you said.
Yeah. These comments and in regard to Mrs. Coyle were purely for research and not to insinuate or be derogatory in any manner, and they must be edited with the approval of the person being talked about. And this is Harry Hughes, and this is the end of this comments.